You're listening to Panel Borders, which is an extract from Resonance FM's weekly show about the world of comics. In this week's show, I'm talking to comic creator and commentator Coco Wang about the underground comic scene in Beijing. Paul Gravett just introduced me to you as a Beijing underground comics artist. I mean, how would you sort of define yourself?
I myself is not an underground comic artist. I'm just a comic artist, but I introduced lots of underground comics to Paul Gravett, and so he brought them to this exhibition. So lots of my friends, they do underground comics, which is very different from the mainstream comics, and most of those can't get published in China, and those artists, they have like a double identity, you know, and they work for, they take freelance jobs, you know, and illustrate for magazines, and they also do mainstream comics occasionally, but at the same time they do their underground stories, which are more involving like sex, violence, and politics, and religion, that kind of thing, which is quite sensitive that the Chinese publishers they've been staying away from, but. Things are changing so fast in China at the moment, so you know, the publishers, they've been showing interest to these comics, but it's always very difficult to get them out there into the market. So that's what Chinese underground comics is like. Yeah.
Because at the opening of this show, I spoke to one of the organizers from China Now about whether artists being able to express themselves in comic books was perhaps a slightly more liberating genre, because I mean, looking at some of the work downstairs, there did seem to be examples of sex and violence that I wasn't expecting from Chinese comics, and she really didn't want to go into the subject. But I mean, in terms of what sort of defines an underground comic, is it as much the subject matter as perhaps the art style, things that are sort of frowned on by the authorities?
Yeah, I've been asking my friends recently, and they said that there are some publishers that they are interested in their works, although, you know, it's quite frowned upon, you know. But they've been like having meetings and discussing, but it's always never reaching the point of actually publishing them. So most of the time, these underground artists, they self-publishing, they, you know, put together some money and print out maybe like 2,000 to 4,000 copies and sell them in some in creative markets and online mostly, and sometimes in some little stylish shops that sell clothes and little accessories, and they put a few books there as well. And the people who buy them, mainly they are mainly young people, and they don't always have to be like a comic readers, just, you know, average young people, and they are more open-minded, and so that's the way that they sell their works, but it's always in a small amount and not so, you know.
What sort of places would you find an underground comic in China? Because, I mean, looking at, say, the London underground comic scene, some of the more forward-thinking shops like Gosh or Orbital have a small section of sort of self-published underground comics, but the more mainstream shops like Forbidden Planet, they barely stock things that aren't by Marvel or DC, let alone, you know, sort of self-publishing efforts.
I think in China, the easiest way to find those comic books is online, you know, surf internet, and because there are very few creative markets in China, and they don't have very often, so and you know, these artists, they got to know me, and like Craig Yong, the Hong Kong artist, that we can actually, you know, bring their work to a wider stage and to show them. But in China now, is except the internet, is very difficult for them to, you know, to make themselves seen by the mass public. So it's mainly, I would say, internet and online. And also, you know, they spread words between friends, and lots of the people who are comic artists and the people who like to read comics, and because the stories that they create is very individual, it's very strong personality in it, so sometimes it doesn't speak to many people. Like some works are quite kind of a little bit selfish sometimes. They only satisfy their own vanity, or, you know, just to speak what they want to speak. And so I think sometimes they need to work on the technical, you know, expression of these comics, like the way they write the story and the storyboards, the angles of camera and that kind of very technical stuff. So, yeah.
Well, if anything, then it actually sounds the exact opposite of, say, you know, the Western approach, where underground comic book artists over here, there's so much on the web that it's kind of hard to find stuff. And so they actually have to find retail outlets. Like, I mean, I've got some friends that run a stall in Camden Market, and they're trying to sell comics to perhaps a completely different audience to the kind of people who would go into a comic shop. Instead, they're in Camden Market looking for trendy clothes, and then they come across a stall that sells comics and think, oh, this must be trendy as well, you know.
Right. So,
looking at the kind of audiences that buy comics in Beijing, are they sort of like the Chinese equivalent of otaku, or are they perhaps more sort of like, you know, trendy people who would look at fashion magazines and then see comics as a way that sort of younger artists might be able to express themselves that are outside the mainstream media?
Yeah, I think they're more trendy people. I mean, like I said, young people, you know, they are more open and they're interested in this, the new form of expressing lots of secret thoughts or, you know, desires and things. And But for the people who don't read comics at all, it might be difficult. And because the techniques these underground artists use, they use lots of computers now. And I mean, comics is always, it's not like a massive, it doesn't have a massive reader groups, that kind of thing. So, but the underground underground comic artists, what they are trying to do is they try to create as good as possible, you know, to make their own works good, and then to establish like a group of loyal readers, so that, you know, and also make the story more accessible to more people, you know, it's not just about politics or just about religion, but you know, to expand their audiences, to expand.
And thinking of the use of computers, say, to create the artwork, is it because they're appropriating the tools that perhaps illustrations are made with in mainstream magazines, but then using them for more sort of like, you know, subversive uses?
Right. Actually, I think the Chinese illustration is kind of it's born from comics.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. It's surprisingly, lots of comic artists, they are very good illustrators at the same time, and because the Chinese comics originally it's a lot affected by the Japanese manga, and lots of images are very decorative. So like in underground comics, you see lots of widespread pages, and it would be a fantastic piece of illustration. And yes, they do use lots of computer techniques like Painter or Photoshop, or sometimes even 3D software as well, to create some special effects.
Earlier you were talking about comic book illustration, but using film terminology, talking of storyboards and camera angles and things. Is that because, looking at manhwa, it's not dissimilar from manga in the sense that manga comics are a lot closer to film in the way that they're paced, in the way that drawings are framed, as opposed to, say, the Anglo-American language of comics, which is more sort of abstract and relies on a knowledge of having read comic books, as opposed to a knowledge of, say, having seen anime?
I think the manhwa in the Chinese comics, the Chinese illustration and animation, they are a lot like a triangle relationship. It's they are a lot, you know, related to each other. And Japanese manga came to China like in the early 80s, and we learned a lot of like camera angles expressed in the Japanese comics, and, you know, from films as well, especially Japanese animation. You know, and lots of Japanese manga, they have very poetic like image, and you it's like you draw directly from the text, you know. And I need to think about that question, actually.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when it comes to your work, I mean, what would you say that your influences are, and the kind of the niche you're trying to carve out for yourself within sort of like the Chinese comic scene?
I think it's very difficult to give you an answer on that, because, I mean, all different artists, they are influenced, they see different films and they like different manhwa or different things, and they are influenced by different all sorts of different things. So it's very hard to give you like assumption of what is mainly influenced by a mainstream of something, or it's a bit hard to define that.
Looking at your art style, for example, I mean, would you say that the kind of the genres and the subjects that you tackle in your own art are something that would be defined as underground, looking at sort of like your peers?
Right. Well, my work, I wouldn't say it's underground. It's like downstairs, I have a work that it's not exactly manhwa, and it's not manga either. It's called a tuwen, which means text and image. Okay. It's a new form of comics, and that's I think originally it came from Japan, but now it's very popular. It's developed and evolved in Hong Kong and Taiwan. Mm. And that kind of book is very popular in mainland China as well, because it's in a way a bit similar to kind of a magazine comics. It's very loose style, and there's no complicated background, and it's a bit like a comic journal thing, you know, in a way. And that kind of book sometimes is not put in a comic section, it's put in books, like just very entertaining literature and that kind of thing. So it has a wider, you know, range of audiences and readers. And that kind of thing is like the stories just came from, you know, our lives and in a life story, and it's not so dramatic, and because it's real life, so that's why it's moving, and sometimes people make connection and say, oh yeah, we experienced the same thing before, you know, oh yeah, that's funny, yeah, I saw that as well, you know, that kind of people can respond to this kind of comic stories. And the really popular ones, like lots of young people, that they work in offices, and there's, although it's same thing happening every day, you know, in the office, you go to work and you work and have lunch with your colleagues, and then you go home and leave work, and there's that you try to find the fun things and the annoying things or the irritating things during the same daily work, and that kind of story is very popular in the text and image books. You know, so as people try to find laughs from very boring or very hardworking life, kind of comics. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because thinking of, say, British comics, it seems to be an endless debate about what is comics and what is not. That, you know, for example, if you go to a bookshop, things that a lot of people would classify as comics are in the children's book section, because they're either by someone who's got a reputation as a children's illustrator, like Raymond Briggs, or someone like, say, when Neil Gaiman and Dave McKean collaborate, they either make children's books, like The Day I Swapped My Dad for Two Goldfish, or they make comics, like Black Orchid. And it's weird that we always seem to try and categorize things rather than celebrate different aspects of what is essentially the same genre.
So in England, you give them very clear, like, this is comics, and that is children's books, and that is... So you mean...
Well, and then that just seems slightly absurd, because it's just kind of like degrees of variation of the same thing. It's almost like... I don't know if it's because of the fear of comics that some people still have, that we have to say, oh, no, that's not comics, that's children's books illustration, and we like those, or not. You know, I mean, is there a similar debate... When you're looking at Chinese comics, you're saying that certain comics are defined as art and text, and certain comics are defined as comics. Is it some kind of prejudice against the genre, or just because it's still a fairly nascent medium that people don't know quite how to categorize it?
I think in Chinese bookshops, there is a section that will be clearly labeled as comics, and at the same time, there's a... There wouldn't be, like, say, this is illustration section. Mm. It's just comics, and the comics could include, like, illustration style books and the comics, Chinese manhwa and Japanese manga, and things like Garfield as well. You know, there's we are not really like drawing boundaries between them. Kind of, they're just all put together in that section, Yeah, because we have so many other sections, subjects, things, you know, you can't really divide them into. But for the children's illustration books, that would be just defined as children's books, you know. So, as long as the story is created for children, no matter how artistic the illustration, the artworks may be, they will still be, you know, children's books.
Okay.
So, yeah, and... Yeah, but we're getting lots of actually imported children's books from the West these days, and that's about the way we categorize things. Yeah.
And also, you seem to suggest that the genre that a comic book is within might then also mark it out as words, as text and picture, as opposed to comics.
Yeah, because I think the text and image book they would not be, the official name should not be comics, you know, and we almost exactly just give it a name as text and image, two win books, and if you go to a Hong Kong bookshop and you ask for two win books, and they would not be directing you to the comic. You know, that's not a comic category thing. But because there are so many images in them, sometimes they are put together with the comics.
Okay.
So it's, I think sometimes depends on the bookshops. You know, if they want this two-win book to be sold well and they put it with the, you know, big sellers and things, and if it's like out of date and not so popular, and then just, you know, go into some other sections and things, but they would be put together with the comics sometimes. Yeah,
it's funny as well, because that's 2-1 books is almost a homophone for a new publisher of comics in America, which is called First Second Books, and they publish underground comics by American creators, and I don't know if it's just a complete coincidence or in fact there's any kind of connection, you know. I mean,
I don't know much about that in America. Was it like, I don't know.
I think it must be a very difficult time as well for booksellers, because even though, I mean, we can say that comics encapsulate an entirely different range of expression that all just have sort of sequential art in common.
Yeah.
In order to pigeonhole the kind of work that an artist makes and their work to be found in a bookshop, it's kind of hard to find your identity when no one knows quite how to define comics as it is.
Right. Well, the 2-1 books, like in, they have more readers because it's not like a manhwa or a manga. It's like a very dramatic story that if you don't start from episode one, you might not understand how the story goes. But a 2-1 book is not like that. It's like you can just start from the middle of the book and. On the train, and you can just read it and kill your time, and you know, it tells you something about a girl in her office, that's something she talked about with her friend during lunch, and that kind of, you know, it's very it's little moments of life, and it's easier to read, and you know, it's not that kind of a dramatic story, a big sequential story like manga. And also the 2-1 books, also they lots of people, they do travel journals, and it's just like a journal, really. It's like you write your diary, and then you put illustrations next to your writing and to illustrate what you saw and what you see, and some people, they use lots of photographs as well, or edited photographs in computer, that you add drawings onto your photograph to make it like a, you know, it's like a half artwork and half photograph, that kind of thing. So it's very free going. It's very easy, easy to accept. So that's, you know, more people that they read 2-1 books than comic books.
And those kind of vignettes that sort of show slice of life. I mean, in a way, is that kind of the very definition of underground comics? Because those are the kind of voices, the kind of stories that aren't heard in the mainstream media.
Well, the underground comics is very different from 2-1 books.
Okay.
It's, yeah, because the underground comics, they use almost exactly the same storyboard style as ordinary comics. It's just the way that, just the, you know, the subject and the content of the story that is very sometimes provoking and very revolutionary, and the underground comics is comics. It's not like 2-1 books.
I mean, when it comes to your work, Are you happy to work within these different definitions to say, you know, this sort of story that I'm producing is more like a traditional comic, this kind of story is more like a 2-1 book? Or does it depend on the kind of story that you feel like telling that day, or the market that you feel you haven't reached yet with the art that you've been producing?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, when I create stories, I'm very aware of what I'm doing. Like, okay, this one I'm doing 2-1 books, and that one I'm doing comics, and that one I'm doing illustrations. So there's very clear sense of, you know, which one I'm trying to achieve. And for comics, I also have a comics project that I'm working with some other friends, and I wrote the story and I did the basic design, the setup of characters, scenes and everything, and I'm working with a storyboard artist, and that's more like in a manhwa manga style kind of story. And also I have illustration projects, which is like a complete image, and then writing put next to the image that does not go onto the image, like manhwa, you know. So it's a, you know, very formal illustration thing. And the 2-1 is made for, you know, the Hong Kong and Taiwan markets. That's, you know, very popular kind of a culture books. So yeah, I think it's they are not mixed at all. They are very onto their own. Yes.
And what kind of stories are you currently telling in these different styles?
The 2-1 books is basically my own story. It's the name of the book is called Coco Goes to Study in England. So it's my study and my life in UK, basically. I came here when I was 15, so I went to A-level in Yorkshire. So it was,
How was that?
Oh, that was very different from London. It was in the middle of nowhere, and it's a girls' boarding school, lots of rules, and, I had to wear skirts in the winter. Students keep horses there, and our accommodation house was opposite the stables. and hymn singing every morning was, so lots of culture conflicts, and lots of fun things happened, you know, because of those culture differences. And then was my art study in London, so I went to foundation course and BA course and now MA course in Kingston. So it's because there are so many Chinese students in UK now, and more coming, especially after 9/11, that lots of people got rejected from US. Yeah. There are more people coming to UK. So there are lots of people in China, you know, parents and students, that they want to know what life is like in UK, you know, if they send their children to UK, you know, oh, see, well, what's happening to her, you know, she can, so our children are going to be, you know, going to encounter the similar thing, so we need to be, you know, aware, and so, so actually, when I show my books to lots of adults, lots of the parents, that they like it even more, you know, and they bought those for their friends' children, you know, so to show them, you know, this is what's going to be like, you know. So yeah, that's 2-1 books. Okay. And for comics, that's a completely different style, and the story is also not like it's fantasy drama, so it's not real life at all. And because I was influenced a lot by Japanese manga, and my generation, basically, we grew up with Japanese manga. Manga was very popular in China, and the story I'm creating is it's a very Chinese. There's lots of Chinese culture in the comic story I'm doing, and it's like telling the some Chinese story in a contemporary way, because the weakness of lots of the Chinese old stories is people use the old stories and they still tell the stories in the old way that doesn't attract modern audiences. So what I'm trying to do is to, you know, to redesign the old elements, so to make them more acceptable for, you know, to the readers nowadays. So you have to see some images to know what I mean, you know. And illustration, that one I'm developing it more into the direction of like a design product. And because the illustration project I do is a series of short and fat little characters that It's very cute and very decorative, so I'm trying to put them onto clothes or mugs and that kind of thing. So, also I did a complete illustration book of those characters that you can find on my website. It's just very fun.
I looked at your business card that you gave me, and it's also an animator that you work with. So. Is it that you're looking into working in animation, or is it because animation is kind of seen as a more legitimate business than producing just, say, 2D sequential art?
Oh, the animation is because if you see my name card, it's Coco and Dodo. Mm. So Dodo, she's my partner back home. That she's a producer of, she's an animation producer. She works in an animation company. So because she has lots of contacts from publishing companies and comic artists as well. Yeah. And because in lots of animation companies, there are comic artists working in the 2D department. You know, do storyboard or character setup and that kind of thing. So, like I said, you know, it's very much connected to these industries thing.
Thinking in terms of sharing a studio, I suppose it's as much that you feed off of each other's kind of media. That while she may be working in animation and you're working in illustration, because there is the crossover between these kind of practices, it's helpful to share a studio with someone that may not necessarily work in exactly the same industry, but there is this crossover between the disciplines.
Yeah, because the people who do the 2D artworks in animation companies, some of them used to be comic artists, or they are freelance illustrators, and their experience is very helpful to the animation companies to achieve the high quality of art effects and that kind of thing. So, Dodo, she manages the production side of. So it's some animation companies, they even hold training courses. They receive students that has both animation or comics background, and they do very practical training. It's they're already working as a work experience in an animation company if they go into this course. Mm. So it's so that's why how they help each other out, the animation and comics. Yeah.
I mean, is that a field that you would like to work in personally, or are you just happy to share a studio with an animator so that you can kind of feed off each other's ideas?
Not really. When you say animator, you actually mean the animator.
Well, in the sense that perhaps the stories that you're telling might either become animation, or you actually make storyboards, or even a sequence of cells that might become a cartoon.
Well, because the part of animation that I'm interested in is the pre-production side. You know, it's the creation part. So create stories and write scripts and do design and that kind of thing. And actually, I started from animation.
Okay.
As the comic story, the comic project I told you about, it was aimed as an animation project, and the Chinese Culture Ministry they collaborated with me that they want to present my project as an animation project to some Japanese companies, but because the Chinese animation industry at the moment is a big post-production industry for lots of Western foreign animation companies, and animation is a teamwork. I mean, and I just my story or just my script is not going to make the whole thing work, and it's very difficult to find funding as well. And most animation companies in China, the ones that can get projects from overseas and they can survive, but the ones that make to do something original, and sometimes it's considered a suicide project approach to things. And so that's why I gave up trying to make it an animation project, because it will be too big to handle. So I wanted to start slowly from comics and then maybe progress it, do collaboration with some foreign companies and to make it possible. But otherwise, I know it's already the animation is. I brought the project to Japan and to France as well, and I met some directors that they said they're interested in directing the story if, you know, once everything is in place, but it's very difficult to be in place.
Well, I mean, hopefully on the back of the success of, say, a film like Persepolis, there'll be greater chance for not only individual comics creators to have a very personal version of their comics turned into animation, but also, I mean, women comics creators as well, who perhaps haven't quite had so prominent a voice in the industry, will begin to be heard with the kind of stories that they want to tell.
Women comic artists.
Yeah.
You know Yishan Li, like, like her, and I think she might have told you that there are not many female comic artists in China, and the ones like her, you know, she once told me that it's very easy to get attention, you know, because there are not so many female comic artists. And sorry, what was your question?
Yishan and yourself are perhaps, you know, a rare example of a female comics creator, but also on the back of a film like Persepolis, which comes out soon, and
it is
a very kind of accurate translation of the graphic novel, there is perhaps a chance for more individual voices to have their creations turned into cartoons.
That's not the case in China.
Really? Okay.
I wouldn't say that, no. It's, the successful example of Chinese animation was... it's very sad to think about that. For example, there's one called The Blue Cat. It looks like a imitation of Tom and Jerry, you know, the Tom, like the Tomcat. And the story is not so interesting, and the design is not trendy and is very traditional, but because there are not so many things going on, you know, original Chinese animation things, and one is out, no matter is good or bad, and then it gets the attention, you know, and that blue cat is put on lots of children's products, bags and stationeries and things, and besides that, and the other things would be, you know, from overseas, and so. It's always the creativity, the creation part is the most struggling part in no matter animation or comics and thing. And also comics like there are very few artists that they can create very good stories, and it's always do post production for, you know, French publishers and things. So it's not.
When it comes to the availability of your work in the West, I mean, obviously there'll be examples of it on your website, but if, say, if British listeners wanted to buy some of your comics or your 2-1 work, what would we be able to get hold of in this country?
Well, the 2-1 book I published in Hong Kong was in Chinese, so I haven't translated that into English yet, but I did like a taster version of it for this exhibition. But if you want to get that kind of book, the best place would be go online to order online. And most 2-1 books from Hong Kong and Taiwan, they don't have English versions because the format of the book, you know, it's not comics, it's not manga, and it's very new, that kind of thing, to UK readers, I think. I'm not sure that if English people here can accept that kind of a... You know, it's like a comic journal, like a magazine comics, that kind of thing. So,
okay. So
the publishers in Hong Kong and Taiwan, they didn't think was very necessary to translate into English because maybe the readers are not so keen on that kind of books.
And your comic book work?
Sorry.
And if people wanted to read your comic book work.
I displayed a few pages from my 2-1 books downstairs, and lots of people thought it was very funny because I selected a story that was my art study experience from Slade School of Fine Art. That was the first time I drew nude people, you know, so it was very funny. So because my story is about like the culture thing between, you know, the English and the Chinese, and people find some, you know, something that they can respond to, you know, something familiar, you know, it's an institute in London, and then it's a Chinese girl, you know, seeing this kind of thing. And, yeah, so, yeah, I showed the day that I brought in my taster version, the book's copies, was late last Saturday, and I met a tutor from the college, and when she saw the book, she said, "Oh yeah, you did that. I saw the pages from, you know, downstairs, and thought it was so funny." so she bought one, you know, and the taster version. So it was it's very good to see that people, you know, can respond to this kind of humor. Cool. Yeah.
So hopefully we'll be seeing more English translations of your work then.
I will be completing the English version of the whole book, you know, soon. So, you know, because it's been receiving some good feedback, so I think I'll try to present it to some English publishers, maybe to see what happens. I don't think they have seen this kind of book before, so that's what I'm a bit worried, because I heard the English publishing industry is a bit very, they tend to go safe, you know, they're not. Yeah, so.
Cool.
Hopefully.
Oh, I look forward to it.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
In the next podcast, you can hear my final report from the Manhua exhibition, where I'll be talking to Benjamin, Ni Kondru, and Zhang Zhizhu, with translation by Coco Wang. For more info about all the artists exhibiting at the Manhua exhibition at the LCC, please visit www.paulgravette.com or www.lcc.arts.ac.uk. Thanks for listening.